thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She hopes to be back on the air next week. Many analysts say that loopholes in our patchwork of financial regulation played a big role in last year's banking crisis. But Sheila Bair, chair of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, argues the creation of one so-called super regulator is not the solution. Sheila Bair joins me by phone to talk about what changes she thinks need to be made, current issues at the FDIC, and the outlook for the U.S. banking system. And later in the hour, we'll hear from other banking experts and from you. Our listeners can call our toll-free line, 1-800-433-8850, or send us an email at drshow@wamu.org. Well, Sheila Bair, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you.
And I saw you had an article, an op-ed piece in yesterday's New York Times, where you wrote about why you think a super regulator for the banking system is the wrong thing to do. Why don't you think that would work?
Well, I think the op-ed was particularly focused on trying to combine regulation of state and federal charters into a single regulator, which we think is unnecessary. The ability to choose between a state and federal charter for federally insured banks really was not a contributing factor to this crisis. We certainly we've had a dual banking system for 150 years here. It's actually worked quite well. There was a lot of regulatory arbitrage, if you will, or choice, regulatory evasion between the bank and the non-bank sector, the so-called shadow banking sector, and we're strongly supportive of closing that gap. We are strongly supportive of a consumer agency that would have the ability to write rules across the board for banks and non-banks and have a vigorous enforcement component for non-banks, because we have a fairly elaborate regulatory and enforcement examination process for insured depository institutions, but not much that exists for non-banks. We've also suggested a systemic risk council made of all the federal, the major federal regulators that would have authority to look across the system and make sure that there is a homogenization of regulatory requirements and prudential standards so that you don't get into a situation again where unregulated providers of financial services generate a lot of high-risk loans. Mm-hmm. It puts a lot of negative competitive pressure on everyone.
So you think this idea of a council of federal financial regulators is a better way to go?
Well, I do. For prudential requirements, I do. I think that would include the market regulators as well as the banking regulators. And certainly there could be some more streamlining of banking regulation. But I think people need to understand the importance between an FDIC-insured bank and non-bank financial services providers, such as third-party mortgage brokers, investment banks. A lot of the high-risk mortgage lending really got started outside of the banking sector with unregulated mortgage broker originators being funded by Wall Street investment banks. This lowered underwriting standards. It spilled back into the banking system. But until you really get a handle on that non-bank sector with stronger regulation and enforcement capabilities, I don't think you're going to fix the problem.
So if you had this council that would try to bring the shadow banking system also under some kind of stronger regulatory supervision, who would chair it?
Well, we think you could have there are proposals for how to have the Treasury Department chair it, the Secretary of the Treasury. Alternatively, it could be a separate presidential appointee. We think the latter has some merit in the sense that you would have someone exclusively focused on this, addressing systemic risk across the system and making sure that there aren't these loopholes that unregulated entities can exploit. So I think an independent presidentially appointed chairman to oversee this, and then the agency should be staffed with independent staff who would have broad ability to gather data, to gather data from regulators as well as from institutions directly to share information, and to recommend prudential standards to address regulatory gaps.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is something that would be quite useful. But my concern is that, you know, Susan, whenever there's a momentum for reform, and there should be reform, there are a lot of gaps that need to be filled. And one other area we haven't talked about, OTC derivatives, off-exchange derivatives, which are essentially unregulated, we really think that that should be a key component of this. But the others may have other agendas that, you know, you put a reform symbol on it and say, well, we need to do this. I really think doing away with the separate state and federal charters is not something we should do. I'm very concerned about preserving the community banking system, and most community banks are state chartered. I think combining them all and forcing them all into one single regulator, my fear is if you look at the single regulator systems in Europe, which did not perform well during this crisis, and they are, I think, very heavily dominated by very large financial institutions. And I think that would be a very harmful thing here in the United States to have.
Now, Sheila Bair, you've been given a lot of credit for being one of the first people to recognize the subprime mortgage crisis when it approached and speaking out at odds at sometimes with the Bush administration. President Bush, of course, appointed you to the job that you held during that. And we see now with the Obama administration, too, while you say in the op-ed piece you wrote yesterday that you support the key pillars mm-hmm. of the Obama administration's reforms, there are some areas in which you and the White House disagree. And we've seen these published reports about a very lively meeting that apparently took place with you and the Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and other regulators in August. Are those accurate?
You know, I don't comment on private meetings. I think those regulators should be able to get together and have candid conversations, and so I would prefer not to discuss those types of meetings publicly. I would say, though, that we do have a lot of common ground with the administration and wanting to push reform forward. On the issue of whether state and federal charters should continue to exist with separate regulators, the administration agrees with us. We're in, mm-hmm. in common cause with the administration. Preserving the vitality of that state charter, I think, is very important, especially for community banks. So I don't want them to get caught up in the backlash of some of the other, you know, more profound problems that we've seen. That said, we are an independent agency, and when asked by Congress to testify and provide our views, we are expected by Congress to present our honest and independent views, and we have done so. But I think we've done that in a constructive way, in a way that emphasizes the areas of agreement, which are many. But this is, we all need to accept that at the end of the day, Congress will decide this, and so we can all make our best arguments and share our perspectives honestly and independently, but Congress will be making the final call.
Now, tell us how you think the current banking system stands. For instance, I know that you have more than 400 problem banks on the FDIC list now, the most since the savings and loan crisis in the early 1990s. What's the outlook for bank failures over the next 12 months?
Well, I think overall the banking system will be fine. There will be more bank failures. We've had 84 this year. There will be more this year and next. There will still be, you know, costs associated with the cleanup. And as the economy recovers, and it appears that there are real signs of economic recovery here, banks will lag that recovery, which is traditionally the case as the economy emerges from recession. So we will have bank failures will continue into next year. We will have cleanup costs associated with this. But it will be a small minority of banks, I think, that have been failing and will. And overall, the banks are maintaining standards above regulatory capital. And there's a lot of pressure on earnings because they need to reserve for losses as they clean up their balance sheets. So we'll expect that to continue. But, you know, we will emerge out of this. And I think I hope that banks, at least insured depository institutions, as well as those of us who regulate them, have relearned some lessons about back to the basics banking and prudent underwriting and knowing your customers and serving their interests and understanding that making loans to people that they cannot afford does not serve anyone's interest. And so I think getting back to that, and I think I hope there's a resurgence of the value of community banking, that closer touch, higher touch banking will also come out of this. But I do fear that in the name of reform, some of the regulatory consolidation that is being suggested will hurt smaller banks. It will not help them.
Well, we know that the Senate Banking Chairman, Chris Dodd, has spoken favorably about the idea of this kind of super regulator. Do you think you're going to be able to persuade him against that idea?
Well, I think we can. We'll have lots of discussions, and I think we agree with Chairman Dodd on almost everything. And I think there certainly are ways to do additional regulatory streamlining. But again, just consolidating regulation of entities that are already heavily regulated is not going to, we feel, tackle the crux of the problem, which is this vast shadow unregulated banking sector. So, and I know Chairman Dodd agrees with us on that and wants to have more even across the board consumer protections as well as prudential standards. So we will work with him try to address this streamlining issues and where there is a necessary duplication of effort, certainly that should be done with. But, you know, the irony of having this this super regulator idea, this is actually something that the very large financial institutions had been pushing in 2006 before the crisis hit. And they were pushing it because they did want a model along the lines of what they had in the UK, which, and I think the folks in the UK will agree now, did not perform well. It was too subject to capture by these very large financial institutions. So, again, I think having it one super regulator could make things worse, not better. And so we want to make sure that those risks are understood and shared with Congress, and there may be other ways to accomplish and address some of the concerns.
We're almost out of time. Just one quick question.
Sure.
Last year, the limit for federally insured deposit was raised to $250,000. Some questions about the strain that's put on the fund that backs up that promise. Do you think it should stay at $250,000, or should it go back to $100,000 as it was before last year?
Right. Well, we have traditionally let Congress decide what the insured deposit limits should be. And so they have, as you said, extended it for 4 years out to 2013. I will say, though, I do think there's a misperception that this is a dramatic increase in the FDIC's exposure. It was not. Mm-hmm. Prior to this time, 98% of all accounts were fully insured already. Most people were below. The vast majority of people
Sheila
were below.
I'm so sorry. We've got a break coming. We thank you so much for joining us on the Diane Rehm Show, and I apologize for having to end this conversation now. Thanks for being with us.
Sure, you bet.
Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. And now with me in the studio, Steve Radier of the Independent Community Bankers of America. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you very much.
And by phone from London, we have Michael Greenberger, who is a professor at the University of Maryland Law School and a former senior regulator with the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. Michael Greenberger, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
And by phone in Washington, Eugene Ludwig. He's now founder and CEO of Promontory Financial Group. He's a former U.S. Comptroller of the Currency and a former director of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Eugene Ludwig, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
It's great to be on, Susan.
Let me start with you. We've just heard Sheila Bair, the head of the FDIC, speak against the idea of a super regulator for U.S. banks. You're in favor of that idea. Why?
Susan, I have a tremendous respect for Chairman Bair. She's been an outstanding public servant, and we're lucky to have people of that caliber in the supervisory sector of the United States. The one thing we can say is that our supervisory system, not the people, the system, has been dysfunctional. It is a system that didn't work in this crisis, and indeed we've had a number of crises over the last several years with increasing frequency since the 60s. So something has to be done. The alphabet soup of regulators we currently have, which involves my former agency and a bunch of others, is a model that no one around the world not only has adopted but would consider adopting, and is really a matter of history more than logic. I think probably a super regulator is a bit of a misnomer. The thing I think we need is a consolidated institutional supervisor that's professionalized and does end-to-end supervision. That is, supervises the entire enterprise. But that would still be only one of several regulatory bodies in our system. You'd still have an SEC, a CFTC for the markets, Federal Reserve doing monetary policy and payment system, FDIC doing insurance. But the fundamental thing I think would help here is to have an institution that is professional and meets high professional standards and indeed advances those standards in institutional mm-hmm. supervision. I mean, interestingly enough, today you can get a college degree in almost anything in America, but the one thing that you almost can't get a degree in is regulation yeah. and supervision, particularly of institutions.
Michael Greenberg, what do you think needs to be done?
Well, let me just say that I agree on this issue of a super regulator and the secondary issue of whether the Fed, rather than this council of regulators, should have primary responsibility for ensuring that the country doesn't fall into a systemic break. I agree with Chairman Baer 100%. The problem here wasn't a question of an organizational chart that led us down this road to catastrophe. The problem was a failure of leadership. And
failure of leadership by whom?
By those who were responsible for taking care of the economy in each of the various institutional responsibilities. And I think that most clearly is demonstrated by events that happened in 2001 when Ms. Baer, who was an assistant secretary of the Treasury, and went to Alan Greenspan and said, Chairman Greenspan, you have responsibility and the power under a statute that you administer to head off what is going to be a calamity in the subprime mortgage crisis. And she got no response and no answer. Another member of the Fed also approached Chairman Greenspan. Chairman Greenspan advocated, Ms. Baer talked about, the failure of regulation, the trillions of dollars of complicated regulatory instruments referred to as OTC derivatives were deregulated by Congress in December of 2000. The foremost proponent of that regulatory structure was Chairman Greenspan. I would expect that if in 1999 and 2000 we had a law that created a super regulator, the unanimous consent at that point would have been to put Alan Greenspan in charge. And I think as we're seeing today, the fact that we have diversity in leadership, you have people like Sheila Baer who are going against the grain and calling out problems in policy development within the Obama administration. And it's not her alone. Chairman Gensler of the CFTC on August 17th wrote a letter to Congress critiquing the Obama administration OTC derivatives proposal, saying that last-minute loopholes that were put in that legislation will swallow its purpose and intent. I think we are helped by having the best regulators we have, but we need to have diversity in the regulatory system. Frankly, the Department of Homeland Security is a poster child. We were going to have excellence and centralized leadership in the fight on terrorism. And up at least until Secretary Napolitano has taken over, the Department of Homeland Security has been a model of the failure of consolidating agencies.
Well, let's talk to Steve Verdier here with me in the studio. Now, of course, most banks in the United States are not these big banks, they're community banks. And we heard Sheila Baer talk about her desire to make sure that they're interests are protected. How do community banks feel about these various regulatory proposals? What are the implications for them?
Well, we think the idea of a super regulator, a one-size-fits-all regulator, is an absolutely terrible idea. The current system does look a little messy on paper. You've got an organization chart that looks a little confusing, but it does provide the valuable checks and balances that I think your previous speakers have mentioned. And getting rid of the current system that for community banks and for most banks in general has worked quite well is a little bit like firing your best employee just because that person doesn't keep their desk as neat and clean as you'd like.
All right. Let's go to the phones. We want to give our listeners a chance to join this conversation. Our toll-free number, 1-800-433-8850. Those phone lines are now open. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment, or you can send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Well, our first caller was Thomas calling us from Richardson, Texas. Thomas, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Mr. Greenberger has done some fine work on oil speculation, and I'm really sensitive as a small businessman to this nonsense of calling these utilities and oligarchies free enterprise or free market systems. These contain none of the checks or few of the checks that small businesses contain. They've externalized so many of their costs. They're through the FDIC and all sorts of guarantees that, again, that does no way the model. It seems that these extraordinary executive salaries encourage the risk-taking to help justify the pay these rainmakers try to claim for themselves. The community banks are a fine example, and credit unions, nonprofits, those are generally going to offer you a better service. They're better capitalized for these reasons. They are more competitive. Can we please have a denouncement of this nonsense free market rhetoric? These
All
are
right.
utilities. Yeah.
All right, Thomas, thanks for your call. Michael Greenberger, what do you think?
Well, I think what the caller, when he uses the word utilities, is he's referring to the fact that after the meltdown, we have fewer large banks who have more control over the economy. And basically, they are just, in a sense, a utility for depositors for, in the best of circumstances, the making of loans and making markets. I think that there is a uniform concern now that you have essentially three banks that have one-third of the deposits in the United States. There's less competition. The charges of banks for, checking accounts, whatever, are skyrocketing. There's no competition. This is a very, very serious problem, and I think community bankers and credit unions have been put at a tremendously unfair disadvantage. Their capital requirements are high, much higher than these monster banks that have been left after the meltdown, and they operate at a serious competitive disadvantage. And I think the American citizen is locked into a very unfair and non-competitive financial infrastructure.
Is that how it looks to you, Steve Verdier?
That's exactly how it looks, and I think we've got an excellent solution on the table. The President Obama has proposed a systemic risk regulator with some real teeth to have higher capital requirements for these mega institutions, and to make sure that the systemic risk regulator really does go after the folks that are up to now not regulated. And finally, at his most recent press conference, he announced a support for a pre-funded systemic risk fund so that if we ever get into one of these messes again, that there'll be some money on the table, just as there was with the FDIC, to at least get started cleaning up the mess.
Eugene Ludwig, we know that Michael Greenberger called them monster banks. I guess that'd be J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, that have become such a huge part of the banking system, really bigger now than before this crisis began. Does that concern you?
Well, I think that having institutions in America that are too big to fail is not healthy. And we ought to have a system that accommodates big banks, small banks, banks that are international, banks that are totally domestic. The diversity of banking in the United States has been a huge strength for the United States. So So the issue before the House is not whether we have large banks, because in order to compete internationally, we need large, sophisticated organizations. But the issue before the House is how to resolve troubled banks, whether they're large or small. And one of the many good things that the Obama administration proposal does in the area of finance is to propose a resolution mechanism that would resolve largest institutions so that we don't have institutions that are too big to fail.
Eugene Ludwig, do you think that the root causes that led us to this financial meltdown, this banking crisis that we've seen over the past year, have they been effectively addressed yet, or do you think we still have a long way to go?
No, I don't think they've been effectively addressed yet. I'm sorry to say the current administration has done a superb job of dealing with the crisis in crisis mode, as has Chairman Bernanke at the Fed and Chairman Barron and many of our civil servants. But the root cause, which was underregulated financial institutions, mortgage brokers, and a system that had really gotten beyond any regulatory purview, hasn't really been addressed yet, and so that is an ongoing problem. We really need a more professionalized regulatory mechanism that's comprehensive, so that you don't have bits and pieces that can do whatever they want outside the regulatory umbrella.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're taking your calls at 1-800-433-8850. Well, Michael Greenberger, what do you think the odds are that Congress will succeed in passing some fundamental changes in the way these financial institutions are regulated in an effort to address the root causes of what happened?
I think it's at best a 50-50 proposition. And the reason I say that is I think on an intellectual basis, the reforms that are needed are clear. The cleaning up of the OTC derivatives market, an effective systemic regulatory system, and the Consumer Finance Protection Agency, things that Sheila Bair has supported. She may not support who the systemic regulator would be. There's a difference on that, but she supports the concept. Possibly with the exception of the systemic regulator, there are billions of dollars in lobbying funds on one side of the ledger, and that is to weaken all efforts to protect the American investor and the American depositor. I think the Consumer Finance Protection Agency is in jeopardy. That's an institution that would screen the boilerplate that we all get from our credit cards and our loans, et cetera, and that not even a highly skilled lawyer can translate and would protect us against that. The OTC derivatives proposal that the Obama administration was supporting looked pretty strong, and then when the language finally appeared, it had loopholes that, as Chairman Gensler of the CFTC wrote to Congress, swallow the purpose.
Well, then how did that happen?
Well, the reason it happens is those who would be subject to the regulation have huge amounts of money to fight the regulation. And those who are fighting for the consumer and the investor largely have nothing. They're basically, that lobbying effort to protect the consumer and the investor is being left to volunteer services by and large. I think the American consumer and investor who's listening to this program should be very alert to the kinds of things that are going to happen in Congress on September 23rd. The House Financial Services Authority will take up the Consumer Protection Finance Agency. I think if I were a betting person at this point, I would bet against any meaningful product coming out of that. Why? Because the members of that committee are besieged by lobbyists. There are probably three lobbyists for every member who needs to be lobbied. And the American people are basically have been poorly led. They don't understand what's at stake. They're not organized. And there is a sense, and I'm not sure that sense is correct, that we're coming out of this and everything will be well. I think that there are too many signs that the successes we've had have been shared by very few institutions, mostly large banks, and the failures have been suffered by the average citizen who, if he or she's job is not seriously affected, there's somebody within close reach of that person who faces the loss of a job and the loss of health insurance.
Also true that these are such complicated issues. I think a lot of Americans struggle to understand exactly what should happen. Well, Steve Verdier, when you look at the community banking systems, are there signs now that we are, in fact, clearly coming out of this recession and are in recovery?
Well, as Chairman Bear said, that we do have a lagging indicator problem with the community banking. But let me address what Michael was just talking about, and that is the approach that the consumers and the investors ought to take. Certainly, we agree that there ought to be very strong consumer protections and that the new agency should focus on the up-to-now unregulated institutions. But also, we believe that the best consumer protection would be a very strong regulator of the largest institutions, a very strong systemic risk regulator in the jargon, because it was the subprime crisis was really driven by the mega banks on Wall Street that demanded these mortgages be created so that they could sell them to the hapless investors. So the investors and the borrowers were the victims here, but the perpetrators were the largest systemic risk institutions.
Steve Verdier is with the Independent Community Bankers of America, and we're also joined by phone in Washington by Eugene Ludwig, who's the former U.S. Comptroller of the Currency, and by phone from London by Michael Greenberger, who is a former senior regulator with the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take some more phone calls, 1-800-433-8850, and read your emails. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe on the web at germany.info, and by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, whose Kids Count is a state-by-state look at child well-being and the important role of data, at aecf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
They are one of the tiniest and most timid of the ocean's inhabitants, and the males play a highly unusual role in childbirth. A marine biologist describes the mysterious life of seahorses and why they've fascinated mankind through the ages. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Let's start with a question that we got from a tweet on Twitter. The person writes, please discuss what these reform ideas will do to existing savings and loans and thrifts that have existed for years. Steve Verdier, could you answer that question?
Well, the administration's plan, it calls for eliminating the savings and loan charter, and we disagree with that. We think that there are a lot of good savings and loans out there that have been serving their communities very well, and we think that they should be allowed to maintain the charter that they have. They have a focus on home lending and consumer lending, and there's no real reason to eliminate that charter. It's not the predominant charter in the economy today, but those institutions that have it do a fine job.
Here's a question that was sent by Matt via Facebook. He writes, Are banks such as BB&T receiving a backdoor government handout in the FDIC-brokered bank takeovers? And do taxpayers fully understand the assumed risk? Eugene Ludwig, could you talk about this? Now, this is this effort by the FDIC to encourage the sale of these banks that are failing.
No, Susan. The FDIC effort, which is actually required by law, is least cost resolution obligation, so the taxpayer doesn't have to pay a lot of money, allows institutions that are healthy to acquire institutions that are in trouble. They pay for them, and money goes directly to the FDIC, so that you have a continuous service for customers and a healthier banking system. So I think that the process that the government has in place for the resolution of these institutions has been historically a good one, and the FDIC is doing a fine job of administering that.
Well, I thought that the FDIC was assuming some of the risk involved to encourage these healthier banks to take over the banks that failed. Is that wrong?
In some cases, that's true, and in some cases, it isn't true. I suspect over the course of this cycle, and by the way, we are no means through the difficulties in this cycle, in the course of this cycle, the FDIC, I think, will have to assume more of the risk in a number of these institutions because they've gotten themselves so sick, and that's unfortunate. But it's a good deal better result getting them sold off so the branches can keep operating than simply having no mechanism at all. And this, the FDIC's process in terms of resolution and providing some governmental support when necessary is longstanding in American tradition. It's worked rather well.
Michael Greenberger, I wonder if we have an escalation of bank failures, more than 400 banks now on the troubled bank list at the FDIC, are there going to be buyers for all of these banks?
Well, that's an interesting question, and you can read the tea leaves by the FDIC's recent lowering of the standards for purchasing the banks. That's a very, very big concern. And, you know, one of the saviors look to save this banking situation is these private equity funds and the FDIC to make sure that they could sell off these banks to the so-called private equity funds, which are poorly regulated and opaque institutions that have created their own havoc within the economy. They've had to lower their standards to make it more likely that they can take some of these sick banks over. I think overall there's some consolidation that's good, and there's some consolidation that's not so good. I think having these huge banks, which really are, you know, we can have small banks here and small banks there, regional banks here and regional banks there, but we're now at a situation where we have four or five banks that are really controlling the banking system. I think it is the highest form of myth that this is all wonderful and we will face global commercial difficulties by these huge banks. These huge banks took us down a road where the entire world's economy has collapsed. I'm sitting here in London right now, and the head of the unified super regulator here, Lord Turner, has recently said, much to the chagrin of the interests, financial interests in London, that these big banks have to be lowered. We don't need them. They not only are shooting themselves in the foot when they're left unconstrained with this power, but they're shooting the British economy in the foot. I believe the same thing is true in the United States. And if we're going to leave four or five banks essentially running the banking system when this is over, I can guarantee you in 5 or 6 years we'll be confronted with the same problems, too big to fail. I don't care who the systemic regulator is. These banks are so big that they blackmail and hijack the American economy.
Steve Verdier.
Susan,
I agree they need to be downsized. That's the next to-do for the administration and the regulators.
And Eugene Ludwig, let me give you a chance to speak.
Yeah, I must say I quite disagree with that. I mean, fellow panelists are quite astute and good folks, but I quite disagree with that. The in terms of serving the American people's interests, in a globalized world that is getting bigger and more sophisticated. We need banks of all sizes. I'm a big fan of community banks and giving them a level playing field. But the thing the United States should not be doing is deciding a priori what size bank we want to have. What we ought to be doing is making sure that we have a regulatory mechanism in place that can handle big and small. Furthermore, most systemic events, including the one we've just lived through, are not a cause of large institutions or particularly small institutions. They're the result of governmental policy. This has been true for 200 years. That's been mistaken. So why we are where we are is a result of policies that liquefied the economy too aggressively in the early part of this decade and underregulated it, particularly with regard to particular institutions that were virtually unregulated. So in any case, I would be strongly opposed to setting size limits. I think it would be contrary to the benefits of a free market economy and would really hurt the consumer.
Well, Eugene Ludwig, what are the government policies that you're talking about that you say led us to this point?
Well, we did a couple of things wrong that were very serious. One, we allowed a great deal of liquidity to be pumped into the economy. We had very low interest rates and what they call a flat yield curve, where our traditional institutions could not make a great deal of money, partly because there was too much liquidity around A, and partly because they were competing with unregulated entities. And then at the same time, we didn't protect our consumers adequately. We had these unregulated institutions like mortgage brokers that sold consumers products that were inappropriate to them. They were unregulated, and they spewed those products off into a securitized marketplace. And furthermore, the entire financial system, not just the unregulated, were not sufficiently regulated by a functional regulatory mechanism.
So at the heart, do you think it's the Fed's fault fundamentally?
I think at the heart, it's a system that is more a product of history than logic. I agree with my fellow panelists that we ought to have a system that has checks and balances to it. I think that's very important. And so giving everything to one institution or any institution that would be considered a super anything, I think, is not good. But making sure that each of the institutions that does the job for the American economy is professional and focused on what it does best in a logical system, I think makes a huge difference. And we're not there yet. And until we have a more coherent regulatory mechanism, much of which has been proposed by the administration, directionally, I think they're right in their proposal. Until we have that, we're going to have continued risk that's outsized.
Michael Greenberger?
I think I really have to intercede after that talk. First of all, I would wonder whether the listeners understand that the meltdown led to excessive liquidity and to whether that is comprehensible to them. If there is anything that is comprehensible to virtually everybody in the United States of America, is that the economy collapsed because institutions were too big to fail. And Mr. Ludwig is in favor of a systemic regulator who would increase capital requirements. That is certainly going to constrain the size of banks. And we fundamentally in this country, going back to the progressive era, have had antitrust laws. And we've made decisions that companies can become too big for not only their own good, but the economy's own good. So I would say to listeners who are out there, if they are happy about the fact that three banks have one-third of the deposits, and they're happy about the fact that with no notice they get interest rate charges on expenses they've already incurred, they should cheer on the growth of these large banks. If they want this economy under control, and they want an ability to have institutions fail without bringing the whole economy down, then we must respond to what everybody understands. We cannot have institutions that are too big to fail, hijack the economy, and blackmail the American taxpayer who bails them out in the last analysis.
All right, let's go to Jim in Harvard, Illinois. He's been patient holding on. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. One of the comments made was based on regulation in the mortgage industry, and my big comment is unregulated mortgage brokers were working for Maine mortgage companies, And can he further that discussion, please?
All right, Steve Verdier.
Well, yeah, I think that's a very good point. A lot of people have blamed the mortgage brokers, and certainly they don't get any gold stars in this particular exercise. But I've just been reading a book by Gillian Tett called Fool's Gold, and she demonstrates that the Wall Street investment companies created these securities that packaged up the mortgages. And the idea there was to slice and dice these so that they would hold less and less capital against these securities that they were selling off to investors. Well, then the question becomes, who generates the mortgages that feed into these securities? And it was the mortgage brokers. So the mortgage brokers just did what they were asked to do by the Wall Street, the huge mega banks. So the point is, the mortgage crisis was driven by Wall Street and not the mortgage brokers down on the ground. So it wasn't people coming in and saying, you know, I want the silliest mortgage I can possibly get, and, you know, I want to take a very huge risk with my whole family. No, it was the mortgage brokers at the behest of Wall Street that created that.
Let's talk to Rita calling us from Newbury, Ohio. Rita, you're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Hi, guys. I've been in real estate for like 40 years. And in 1982, Reagan deregulated banks and allowed banks to sell their mortgages. Prior to that, every bank saw its mortgage through to maturity. Now, I think that you're a little more careful if it's not a hot potato that you can palm off on somebody else. And so I think that the grist to the mill are mortgages that should never have been able to be sold.
Rita, interesting
Susan, that's
perspective.
Very,
go ahead.
Yeah, very, very intelligent comment. The fact of the matter is, when those banks, usually they were savings and loan companies, that sold those mortgages and held them on their books, it was a better situation in the sense that they were regulated institutions that had a public purpose, public responsibility. What's gone wrong here, as I've said, is that a lot of these more recent mortgages were generated by unregulated enterprises, and which drove the market, and the kinds of disclosures and community orientation which we had had 20 years ago simply got lost in the marketplace. I don't believe in the notion this was a great conspiracy. I think this was a result of a lack of a coherent regulatory mechanism, which has hurt the American people. And I think the focus on the need for consumer rules and treating the consumer as number one, which I think you see in the administration's proposal, is a good thing and will help to rectify the matter.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're reading your emails, drshow@wamu.org. And let's take another call. We'll talk to Bill. Bill's calling us from someplace in New York. Bill, where are you calling us from?
Barneville, New York.
Barneville. And where is that?
North of Utica.
North of Utica. Well,
just
thanks.
A little town.
Okay. Thanks for calling us.
Well, thank you. What I'm concerned with is the lack of accountability. It seems like me and my friends, we have never heard anyone being held accountable for all of this. And the public trust, I think, would be reestablished by just a kind of taking some indication that the people who created this mess no longer have a job.
Mm-hmm.
Phil and Wendy Graham spent great part of the 90s making sure that derivatives were not regulated. Thank you.
All right, Bill, thanks for your call. Steve.
Well, I'd certainly agree with the caller on the need for accountability, and I think the public is understandably upset with the, you know, the huge salaries and some of those things. But I would like them to focus on the next steps that we've got to take, which is to rein in the size of these institutions. And I do want to make a little pitch for the community bank. There's a lot of accountability in the community bank system. Even if our banker makes a mortgage that it sells off into the secondary market, that hometown accountability is there. If my banker makes a bad mortgage, they hear about it at the hardware store.
We've got to read a final email from Gerard, who's sending us a note from Corinth, Texas. He says, I've read that the FDIC's reserves are currently only 0.22% of its liability potential. How much taxpayer funds need to supplement, and to what extent do these increases in deposit insurance limits put citizens at risk for unforeseen losses? Michael Greenberg, is this something that we should be worried about?
Well, it's something that we should be worried about, but we're really in a world of Hobson's choices. I think if those levels of insurance hadn't increased from $100,000 to $250,000 and it hadn't applied to money funds as well as banks, we would have had the most serious run on money market funds and banks since we had seen in the Great Depression. And I think that the fears of the American public were greatly helped by expanding the deposit insurance program. And, you know, in this world of terrible choices, I would say that giving the FDIC more funds to make sure that institutions are properly insured will save us a substantial and costly aggravation in the future.
Michael Greenberger, he's a professor at the University of Maryland Law School, who's joined us this hour by phone from London. And we've also been joined by phone from Washington by Eugene Ludwig, a former U.S. comptroller of the currency. He's now founder and CEO of Promontory Financial Group. And with in the studio with me, Steve Verdier of the Independent Community Bankers of America. My thanks to all three of you for joining us this hour on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.